Hello, and welcome to another episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer, and this is my podcast about Blu-rays. This week, I have a number of comedy Blu-ray releases from various labels. Some of them pretty spoofy and broad, a few of them a little bit more heartfelt. I'm starting with Waiting for Guffman from Warner Archive.
The City Council of Blaine gave me the responsibility of putting together a show to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Blaine.
I took the whole history of the town and I squeezed it like a piece of fresh bread.
I think the one really important thing that I learned in working with Porky is that I do indeed have talent.
My booby made a kishka. She made it big and fat. My Zeta took one look at it and said, I can't eat that.
I have found here in Blaine a gold mine of talent. I think Johnny would be so perfect, don't you?
He could be the next Keanu Reeves.
We've got Ron and Sheila on board again.
Midnight at the Oasis.
Newcomer Alan Pearl.
I have a very lazy eye, which these prescription glasses help.
Libby.
I've been working here at the DQ for about,
And of course, Lloyd and I, it's like rams butting heads.
Certainly, Corky has brought something to our little theatrical community. He's definitely different.
You know, he can just do everything there is to do, and there's only one other person in the world that can do that, and that's Barbara Streisand.
I have a little announcement to make. Mort Guffman is going to come from New York City and see our show. We have one shot at this. We've got one performance with Mort Guffman coming to town. We need to hitch up our panties and run.
Blaine, Missouri may be small, but Corky St. Clair always dreams big. Determined to get back to the lights of Broadway, he's created Red, White, and Blaine, a musical celebration of the Berg's 150th anniversary. This is Spinal Tap, and Best in Show co-creator Christopher Guest plays Corky in this acclaimed comedy. Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Parker Posey, Fred Willard, and Bob Balaban co-star as stage-struck townfolk who pin their hopes of being discovered on Corky's hilariously hapless theater production, and on reports that big-time talent scout Mort Guffman will be in the audience. Waiting for Guffman does for regional theater what This Is Spinal Tap did for rock and roll. Jamie Bernard, New York Daily News. So, I'm a huge This Is Spinal Tap fan.
Are you telling me that this is it? This is scenery? Have you ever been to Stonehenge?
No,
the
triptychs are, Stonehenge.
The triptychs are 20 feet high. You can stand four men up them.
Ian, I was
This is insane. This isn't a piece of scenery.
Look, this is what I was asked to build. 18 inches, right here. It's specified, 18 inches. I was given this napkin, I mean...
Forget this! Fuck the napkin!
One of my favorite comedies of all time. And it obviously set the style for a lot of mockumentary comedy that would come after. You know, it's not necessarily the first mockumentary ever made, but it certainly sort of put things in place as far as what could be an incredibly funny premise and incredibly funny character-driven comedy in a documentary setting. And then Christopher Guest would obviously go on to emulate that movie with his films, you know, including, as I mentioned, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, which I totally adore, For Your Consideration, Mascots, etc. But I don't know that he's ever eclipsed his work in Waiting for Guffman, because it is just so out there and silly and absurd, and Corky St. Clair is such a fully realized oddball character.
I had been living in New York and working there as an actor and director and choreographer for 25 years or so, and I really felt I needed a change. I imagined in my fantasy, I suppose, that when I came here, I would have a completely different life. Perhaps a construction worker or one of those guys that works on those high wire things that with a hard hat, you know, that sweeping sort of hat. And with the chaps, But that didn't really work out. I began to realize, I guess, that the theater was still in my blood, and what I had to do was make use of that. So I offered my services to the high school here, and they accepted, and I began to teach drama. And within about 6 months, I had formed the Blaine Community Players.
You know, total fish out of water, living in a very small town in Missouri. Just, you know, a uniquely out of touch individual who has written this incredible opus about Blaine, Missouri that has to do with aliens. And just, it's pretty ridiculous. But so many of the what came to be regular players in the Christopher Guest comedies, as I mentioned, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard, Parker Posey. I mean, these guys really showed their comedic chops in this movie. Not that Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, and Fred Willard had anything they needed to prove, as they've always been incredibly funny people, but I just love them in the context of these Christopher Guest films. And so this is still his best as far as I'm concerned, you know, and I'm so glad it's on Blu-ray. It has a feature-length audio commentary with Christopher Guest and co-star Eugene Levy, and additional scenes with optional Guest and Levy commentary as well. Highly recommended. Absolutely pick up Waiting for Guffman. Next up is another unique comic vision from an auteur of sorts, that being Bobcat Goldthwait, and this is Shakes the Clown from 1991.
If you're looking for two-fisted action,
I know karate!
Well, I know the Vulcan nerve pinch.
High drama.
Hey, wait a minute. You clowns are on dope!
And forbidden romance. You, might want to look somewhere else.
What's your name?
Shakes. Shakes the Clown.
Oh, my head!
You're not funny, clown.
Okay, you blow that horn one more time, I'm gonna shove it right up your...
Everybody loves a clown, so why don't I?
Who's the naked clown in our bathroom?
Your total disregard for the clown code of ethics would make your poor father Lippy turn over in his grave. Oh, and Shakes?
Yeah?
Take a bath, will you?
Yeah.
Oh, really scary.
Guys like that, you know? You give clowns a bad name.
When's the last time a film's made you feel this good, huh?
You spit it out!
No, I didn't!
I saw you!
No, it was yummy.
Hubba hubba, Julie Brown.
Leave me alone, milkman scum!
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Here I come! Ready enough!
In the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown movies.
Whew, what a morning.
Shakes the Clown.
Had enough?
So the back says, dueling gangs of clowns are pitted against each other in this outrageously funny comedy written by, directed by, and starring Bobcat Goldthwait. Julie Brown co-stars as the hardworking waitress who stands by her clown. Bobcat stars as Shakes, an amiable alcoholic bozo from Palookaville, USA. But after one particularly wild night, Shakes wakes up to find he's been framed for murder. The hilarious suspects include a pack of rude rodeo clowns, a gang of mimes, and an ambitious party clown with eyes for Shakes' sweetheart. As unlikely superhero as you'll ever meet, Shakes takes to the streets for a slapstick showdown that blows the lid off the big top. Features hilarious performances by Adam Sandler, Florence Henderson, and Tom Kenny, TV's SpongeBob SquarePants, and Robin Williams has a small part. And there's tons of great cameos in this movie. But I just, as with Waiting for Guffman, I love the world that Bobcat creates. It's just this crazy, again, absurd clown universe that, you know, has clown bars, and it has tension between clowns and mimes. It has, like, film noir aspects. It's just loony, you know? And there's lots of great clown gags and clown jokes. And it goes really dark, you know? So it's like, if you were a big Bobcat fan in the 80s, and you're like, I love him in, you know, Police Academy or Hot to Trot or Scrooged, you might think, oh, he's a certain kind of funny. But I think Shakes sort of revealed where he really lives as far as his sense of humor, the darkness to it, and how he sort of revels in that kind of stuff.
When you pitched the movie, what did producers say? What did studio say?
Well, you know,
What did they say? Yeah. Well, it's one of the finest alcoholic clown movies ever made. You know? And I'm married to the producer, so we went to meetings, and I'd go, it's an alcoholic clown movie, and it's a little bit like Sid and Nancy, and a little bit like Barfly, and this was true. One executive goes, those movies didn't make any money. And I go, and it's a little bit like E.T. It's got a little bit of E.T. in it. Man's going, no, he has a whole movie there. Yeah, so, yeah, people were just dying to make this film.
I hear you're a pretty good director. You did a good job.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm kind of shocked that we're getting okay reviews, yeah.
Yeah, Florence Henderson's in it. Maybe that's the cause of the good reviews.
Well, Florence Henderson, yeah, I wake up out of a blackout. That's how the movie opens up. I wake up out of a blackout, and apparently I've done the nasty with Florence Henderson the night before. Yeah, that's the opening of my film. Mrs. Brady's running around in a slip with a hickey on her boob, right? And she said, that was her idea. She goes, can I put a hickey on my breast? And I'm going, for real? Or, you know. I go, sure, go ahead. You know, it's not my Wesson Oil contract. The movie opens today, Friday the 13th, which is good day. Yeah, apparently we couldn't get Pearl Harbor anniversary, so I'm very nervous. If this movie tanks this weekend, I'm going to be doing Thighmaster commercials like that.
How did you get Robin?
How did I get Robin in the movie?
Yeah. And where's his
name? What do you say about how'd you get Robin?
Well, I know he costs a lot of money.
Oh, no, he works inexpensively, but yeah.
Oh, and...
Well, where did you go? How'd you get Robin? What, did he lose a bet? Yeah, he's under an alias. Yeah, I'm sure Robin's really glad that shakes the clowns out the same time the Academy's voting for the Oscars.
Okay, he's up.
Yeah, he's up for a nomination.
How is he in this movie?
How is he? He's really fun, you know? I don't know. Even the people that aren't too nutty about the movie obviously like Robin, so I got that going for me.
And what name does he use in the credits so we can look for him?
Well, you're not gonna miss him.
But in the credits.
He's Marty Fromage.
Oh.
Because him and I did some shows in the past as Jack Cheese and Marty Fromage. I know, you know, I've got the hat on already. You know, that's the early signs. You know, Spike Lee disease hits one in out of two directors.
Oh boy, let's see. Do you like directing? Will you do it again?
Will I do it again? Yeah, if someone allows me to, yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I wrote and directed, so that means there's way too many close-ups of me in this film.
What's the actual plot of the movie?
Arsenio, if anyone goes to this movie for the plot, I'm in a lot of trouble. Really, honest to God, you know? It's a bunch of, you know what's in the movie is hilarious? LaWanda Page.
Oh, yeah, from Sanford and Son.
Man, but do you know her nightclub act?
Yeah.
I had no idea what a nightclub act was like.
I knew she was associated with Red Fox, so I kind of knew.
Yeah, well, Red... God rest his soul, but I think she can make Red blush. Because I'd go, LaWanda, you can just say anything you want. And then, I'd be like, ah! So I put it right in the movie.
And what's her role?
She's one of the clowns at the Twisted Balloon. All the clowns hang out in this bar called the Twisted Balloon, and they drink, and they hate kids, and talk shop. And then there's the Rodeo Clown Bar, and all the clowns hate mimes. But that's pretty universal, but I think, I hope I put this whole mime-bashing thing to bed. There's a lot of mime-bashing. You know, they'll just be driving around, they see mimes performing in a park. Mimes! You hate us because we're artists. Yeah, okay, Bip. Get out of this box, you know.
Speaking of...
So it's, bring the kids.
And he just... I don't know, it's just part of his personality, and I kind of love his personality in that way. And I like him as a filmmaker and how he's continued to make movies that are interesting in their own way. Although I don't think he's outdone himself as far as Shakes, I think, is still the best movie that he ever made. But this is a pretty nice Blu-ray, looks good, and initially wasn't going to have a commentary. I think it might have been delayed. But now they've added a commentary track with Bobcat, Julie Brown, and Tom Kenny, and it's very funny. It's very funny because they are very funny people, and because the process of making a movie like this conjures up lots of interesting and humorous stories. But generally, I think hanging out with these three people would be a pretty riotously fun time, and it is just that. So, great commentary, good disc, pick it up. Next up is one from Warner Archive, and it's The Man with Two Brains.
He's a world-famous brain surgeon.
The only time we doctors should accept death is when it's caused by our own incompetence.
Blade, scalpel, Metzenbaum scissors.
Metzenbaum scissors.
Who wants only one thing in a woman?
Let the cat out of here.
The perfect mind in the perfect body. Steve Martin's Out of Control in The Man with Two Brains.
She's not drunk. She's dead.
Dead. I better get her to a cemetery right away.
Tense.
Jumpy.
6 weeks and you haven't made love to your wife yet?
Into the mud, scum queen.
You have no hair. Oh,
sorry. Don't touch it!
Sleep! Were you out on the lake today kissing your brain?
As far as I'm concerned, you're the most complete woman I've ever known. All my life, I wanted women with great bodies.
Why? I've had the top of her head off, but that's as far as it went.
Go, Chester!
Steve Martin, The Man with Two Brains. You'll laugh your cranium off.
Yeah.
Rated R. Starts Friday, June 3rd. Check newspapers for local listing.
And it says, anyone who doesn't think Steve Martin is one of the funniest fellows on the planet should have his head examined. As The Man with Two Brains, Madman Martin is just the guy to do it, playing Dr. Michael Hufferher, famed originator of screw-top ziplock brain surgery. The good doctor pines for his late wife, but slinky siren Dolores Benedict, Kathleen Turner, sashays into his life and changes all that. They're soon married, but the truth quickly emerges. Dolores' beauty hides a calculating heart of stone. The situation is hopeless, until another brain specialist's oddball research offers a bizarre ray of hope. Anyone with half a brain will rejoice in the sheer lunacy of this sublimely silly farce, directed and co-written by frequent Martin collaborator Carl Reiner. So yeah, for some reason I feel like people don't talk about the Steve Martin comedies of the 80s and 90s as much anymore. And I don't know if it's just because he doesn't do as much comedy now or what, but this is a really funny comedy. It's not the first that I'll talk about in this stack that is definitely feeling like it's part of the Airplane universe, part of the Zucker universe. It's not quite the same kind of gag-driven thing, but there are tons of great gags and just ridiculous asides and so many funny moments. I mean, there's a moment where Steve Martin's talking to his ex-wife, you know, looking at her picture, and she's dead or whatever, and...
Rebecca, if there's anything wrong with my feelings for Dolores, just give me a sign.
No!
Any kind of sign. I'll keep on the lookout for it. Meanwhile, I'll just put you in the closet.
Anyway, just stupid stuff like that. The, again, absurdist humor is something I really appreciate. And there's so many great bits throughout. Get that cat out of here. One of my favorite little jokes. Very fun. Unjustly Forgotten. I love the Steve Martin, Carl Reiner movies. Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Jerk, etc. So definitely worth picking up. No special features, but it looks very good. And I highly recommend it. As do I recommend my next movie, My Blue Heaven, also with Steve Martin.
Former gangster Vincent Vinnie Antonelli.
I'm a new man.
Is being placed under federal protection.
Not the old me.
Hidden in suburbia.
This is the new me.
Assigned his own personal FBI agent.
Now, this is a real nice house. It's one of the nicest we've ever moved anyone like you into.
Hey, Linda, what do you think? I always promised you a nice house somewhere in America.
Let's not get carried away, okay, Vinny?
It's going to be a lot easier if you two start calling each other Terry and Todd.
It's a nice house, Terry, okay?
No, you're Terry and he's Todd.
When will call.
Thanks for everything. I really appreciate it.
And even his night.
This is my job. I get paid. You don't tip FBI, man.
Sure you do.
That leads you to mine. Please, everyone.
The man is a government asset. He has to testify at two major mob trials in New York in the immediate future.
Being in the witness protection program may save Vinny's life.
Boom!
I just want you to keep your nose clean. Capisce?
You trying to say capisce?
Yeah.
Well, don't do it, because it hurts my ears when you do it.
But who's going to save the suburbs from Vinny?
You know, it's dangerous for you to be here in the frozen food section.
Why is that?
Because you could melt all this stuff.
The comedy that asks the question, can an urban hood find suburban hood?
Would you like to try a vanilla brand oat crunchy?
What do you think?
Steve Martin, Rick Moranis.
Have a nice day.
Up yours.
And it says, the FBI's witness protection program is turned funny side up with Steve Martin and Rick Moranis playing mob informant Vinny Antonelli and agent Barney Coopersmith in this criminally comic caper. Vinny's got smooth moves, a swank wardrobe, and a mean dance step. His identity, home, and lawnmower are new, but he's still the same guy, a dude with an eternal scam. That makes Overseer Barney a guy with a huge headache. Co-stars Joan Cusack, Carol Kane, Melanie Mayron, and William Hickey, director Herbert Ross, and writer Nora Ephron, ably aid and abet the two stars. No wonder My Blue Heaven is a paradise for lovers of funny, funny stuff. So, yes, this one also, like I said, kind of forgotten. Some say this movie has like a certain kinship with Goodfellas, and I can see that. It definitely has a similar, you know, witness program protection, end of Goodfellas kind of vibe. It's like the sequel that never happened, you know, the comedic sequel. Steve Martin is definitely no Ray Liotta, but he is pretty oddly funny in this role as this very New York accented gangster who, you know, is a very fish out of water in this small suburban community and ends up kind of doing what he does in the context of this place and being still very charming and humorous as he does it and always causing problems for Rick Moranis. And I do like the two of them together in this movie. They're both very funny, and I miss Rick Moranis' presence in movies a lot these days. It's really unfortunate that he doesn't act too much anymore. But Herbert Ross, pretty funny director, played again Sam. He also did Last of Sheila, which isn't really a comedy, but which I love. Anyway, Nora Ephron, who I'm mixed on as a writer and a director, but I do love her script for this movie. I think it's a great, you know, big Hollywood comedy and not like the kinds that they really make too much anymore. So kudos for that. So pick up The Man with Two Brains and My Blue Heaven for a nice Steve Martin double feature from Warner Archive. Next up, I have a very early film for Woody Allen, and that's Take the Money and Run from 1969.
Oh, don't tell me you're going to use the shower now.
Virgil, why do you do this to me every morning? I just got in here.
Well, I'm going to be late for the robbery.
So you'll be 5 minutes late. They can start without
you. They can't start without me. I'm the leader.
I made you some coffee.
Oh, Jesus. Every day I have trouble getting in the bathroom, for crying out loud.
Honey, what shirt do you want to wear?
What'd you say?
I said, what shirt do you want to wear?
I'm going to wear my light blue.
No, you're not. It was dirty. I washed it last night.
Why did you wash it? I was going to wear it today.
I washed it because it was dirty.
Well, so what? I'm just going to rob a bank.
I happen to have ironed your beige shirt. Do you want to wear that?
No, I can't wear a beige shirt to a bank robbery. Because it's light. I'll be an easy target.
I think it's a perfectly good shirt to wear.
No, it isn't a good shirt. It's beige. Who wears beige to a bank robbery?
What are the other guys wearing?
I don't know. For crying out loud.
Well, why don't you call them up and ask them?
Oh, nobody's going to be wearing beige to a bank robbery. It's in poor taste.
And it says, Hollywood legend Woody Allen made his brilliant debut as writer, star, and director in this delightful satire full of hilarious gags. Virgil Starkwell, Allen, a struggling musician, turns to larceny as a career. Unfailingly optimistic, he is nevertheless a complete criminal failure, although his prison break routes are often successful. And with the support of his loving wife Louise, Janet Margolin, he may yet pull off a successful bank heist if he can just manage to write a legible stick-up note. Allen, at his hilarious best, never fails to steal the audience's heart in this inspired comedy that's nothing less than triumphant nuttiness. The wonderful supporting cast features Lonnie Chapman and Louise Lasser. So this has a really fun opening sequence that's got voiceover from the guy who used to be the VO guy on G.I. Joe, if you remember the opening credits to that show.
G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose, to defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare. G.I. Joe.
He's got a really specific voice. I think he would do all the voiceover for any part of the G.I. Joe episodes that needed it, but I definitely remember him from every single G.I. Joe cartoon opening I ever saw. So it makes it even funnier because this is well before G.I. Joe, but his voice just has a certain interesting authoritative tone that lends itself really well to this kind of comedy.
On December 1st, 1935, Mrs. William Starkwell, the wife of a New Jersey handyman, gives birth to her first and only child. It is a boy, and they name it Virgil. He is an exceptionally cute baby with a sweet disposition. Before he is 25 years old, he will be wanted by police in 6 states for assault, armed robbery, and illegal possession of a wart.
It's almost like a biopic for a criminal kind of thing, but it's very funny, and there's a lot of great gags, the best of which is, as mentioned on the back there, when Woody tries to rob a bank.
What does this say?
Can't you read that?
I can't read this. What's this? Act natural?
No, it says, please put $50,000 into this bag and act natural.
It does say act natural.
So I'm pointing a gun at you.
That looks like gub. That doesn't look like gun.
No, that's gun.
No, that's gub. That's a B.
No, see, that's an N. It's G-U-N. It's gun.
George, would you step over here a moment, please? What does this say?
Please put $50,000 into this bag and app natural. What's app?
It's act.
Does this look like gub or gun?
Gun.
See?
But what's app mean?
It's act. A-C-T. Act natural. Please put $50,000 into this bag. Act natural. It's not...
Oh, I see. This is a holdup.
Yes.
May I see your gun? Well, you'll have to have this note initialed by one of our vice presidents before I can give you any money.
See, I'm in a rush.
What?
I'm in a rush.
I'm sorry, but that's our policy.
But there's a whole bunch of other great sight gags, definitely displaying Woody's, you know, earlier, funnier period of things like Bananas and Sleeper and stuff like that, Love and Death. But, you know, it's early, so you're just kind of seeing him developing, you know, his sort of persona on film. And he does a great job, and it's much funnier than I remembered, and has some music by Marvin Hamlisch, which is pretty cool. So that one's from Kino Lorber Studio Classics. Next up, another criminal story comedy, and it's called The Wrong Guy from 1997. And the back says, a fugitive in his own mind, comic icon Dave Foley, TV's Kids in the Hall, delivers a hilarious performance as Nelson Hibbert, a bungling executive furious over a missing promised promotion. Confronting his boss on the matter, he finds him murdered.
Excuse me. I've read all of these. Do you have anything else?
No.
Then I'm not waiting. Listen, Nagel, I've got something I want to get off my chest. Your treatment of me is completely unacceptable, and I just... Would you stop staring at me like that? Okay? Because the point still remains, how dare you? How dare... All right, fine. If that's the way you want to play, you want to play the staring game? Fine. Two can play the staring game. Okay, I can't play the staring game. You win, all right? Big man, you win, all right? The point still remains that you had absolutely no... Okay, look, maybe this was a bad idea. Maybe this was a bad idea. Ah! Ah! Ah!
Ah! Ah! Ah! Panicking, tripping, and screaming his way out of the office, Nelson, covered in blood, is sure he'll be pinned with the deed, even though video proves his innocence. The getaway scheme's a scream when Hibbert crosses paths with the ruthless killer and clumsy cops. A series of on-the-land mishaps and outrageous misfortunes finally lead him to a coy cutie, Lynn, Jennifer Tilly, who convinces him he's the right guy to put the wacky disaster to rest. Comedy legend David Steinberg directed this hilarious comedy co-starring David Anthony Higgins, Joe Flaherty, Enrico Calatoni, Kenneth Walsh, and Colm Feore. Co-produced and written by Foley, Higgins, and Jay Kogan. So this is one I had definitely heard of but had not seen, and it is one of the best spoof comedies of the 90s as far as I'm concerned, and one that got overlooked for some reason at the time, maybe because people were burning out on this kind of thing. I'm thinking that, you know, we were at the kind of tail end of the Zucker's most interesting period and Mel Brooks's most interesting period. Like, they weren't making the best films. I'm thinking, you know, Dracula, Dead and Loving It and things like that. Maybe people were just a little burnt out on spoof comedies and not paying attention for this one. Or maybe because it's Kids in the Hall, it was destined to be kind of a niche movie. I mean, it's not a Kids in the Hall production per se, like Brain Candy, but it has Dave Foley and Kevin MacDonald shows up, and it feels like an extended Kids in the Hall sketch. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I think it's one of the cases where a sketch is actually extended to feature length to pretty good effect. And there are so many good gags throughout the movie, with Dave Foley just being a total wreck and thinking that the cops are after him, when in fact he's been cleared immediately by a videotape that shows the actual killer offing his boss. But he doesn't know that, so he thinks that, you know, he's going to go down for this crime. So he's constantly hiding from the cops, and there's tons of great gags that we've sort of seen referred to in other movies, like situations that come up in On the Lam movies that are totally lampooned in this film.
I'd like a room, please.
What?
I'd like a room, please.
Sure. Single, double, junior suite?
A single room, please.
What?
A single room, please.
What?
I'd like a single room, please.
That'll be $29.95. In advance, Mr. Cal. Cali Cranston Hillman.
Just all kinds of little situations, you know, of people avoiding cops and funny ways to play off of that. I'm not even going to try and exemplify, because it's literally like a gag or two every scene. Some of them are sight gags. A lot of them are, you know, verbal / situational gags. But it's really incredibly funny and will definitely be on my favorite discoveries of 2017 list. So I'm really glad that this Blu-ray came out from Kino Lorber. It has an audio commentary by director David Steinberg, Dave Foley, co-star Dave Higgins, and co-star actor Jay Kogan, which is a good commentary, much like the Tom Kenny, Julie Brown, and Bobcat commentary, although they get a little more caught up in the movie and there are some more dead spots in this one, but they are also a group of very funny people, and they are talking about the process of coming up with this story. And some of my favorite bits are them talking about scenes that they cut, which sound like they were even funnier. Not that there's anything wrong with the movie, but that these scenes would have definitely been welcome in this already in very humorous spoof. So highly recommended. Again, The Wrong Guy from Kino Lorber Studio Classics. Next up, I've got another spoof comedy. This is Young Doctors in Love from 1982.
For the next 12 months, you will learn to hate my guts. I may break some of you, but those of you who survive will be the best doctors in the state.
It's the daily drama of life and death in a big city hospital.
Don't tell anybody that Dr. Buck fixed your gut.
ABC Motion Pictures and 20th Century Fox present Young Doctors in Love. Yeah! A comedy with stripers, strippers, virgins, yeah! Surgeons.
If you plan to remove the appendix, you will have to break the skin.
Punks, ow! Drunks, dancing, woo! And romancing.
You call that sex? Now let's try it again.
Thrills, chills, pills, and spills.
Now she's in somebody else's bed.
Small guys.
Back on your box.
Fall guys. Famous faces.
I don't like the way your husband looks.
I don't either, but he's good to the children.
Car chases.
It's gonna be a car chase. Car's locked, no chase.
Long shots.
Stephanie?
And short tempers.
Okay, we'll need an anesthesiologist.
Hope. and stethoscopes.
Burns.
Hemorrhoids.
Automatic beds. And newlyweds.
I'm married.
Are you happily married?
Guys who are sleazy.
Show me where your mother lives. Yeah, right there. Come on, yeah.
And girls who are easy.
I looked in your mouth,
checked your breasts, probed every part of your body.
What's wrong with me?
How should I know? I'm a lawyer.
Young doctors in love.
Get out of the way, you...
They fly. They cry. They slide. They collide. They're all here.
Quiet!
But they're not all there.
Foster! Kellner!
It's Young Doctors in Love. There is no cure.
And it says, there's almost always something funny at City Hospital where the amorous young interns think that love, or at least lust, is the cure for everything. Michael McKean, this is Spinal Tap, Sean Young, Hector Elizondo, Harry Dean Stanton, Dabney Coleman, Patrick McNee, Ted C. McGinley, Crystal Bernard, and Michael Richards, and Saul Rubinek, star in this refreshingly wacky hospital parody from the director of Overboard, Pretty Woman, and Runaway Bride. The new interns at City Hospital are desperately hoping to survive the first year of residency, which could prove difficult since their minds are on the wrong body parts. Gary Marshall made his feature film directorial debut with this hilarious comedy in a similar vein to Airplane, Stripes, and The Naked Gun. Yeah, it's definitely trying to be Airplane in a hospital, but it falls a little short of that, but it's still really funny. It really feels more like Police Academy in a hospital, and it preceded that movie by a few years, I think. So, hats off for kind of taking what Airplane did and applying it to another situation, much like Police Academy would a few years later. Although, I feel like those movies are still a little bit more narrative-driven than gag-driven, as opposed to Airplane, which is all gags, as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, it's one of the great unsung performances by Harry Dean Stanton that nobody talks about.
Here in pathology, we consult the dead and ask them how we may cure the living. Here we interpret the messages the body sends us. Messages found in substances the uninformed find disgusting. They are not disgusting, they are beautiful. They are the literature of pathology. Doctors, the human being emits, oozes, secretes, excretes, salivates, urinates, menstruates, lactates, evacuates, expectorates, and ejaculates.
You left out regurgitates.
Hey, don't help me, Kurtzman. Now, there are more than 20 vital bodily fluids, and I am proud to say that I have tasted every one of them. This urine, for example, what will it tell us? Definite sugar taste. Now, I don't need a battery of tests to tell me that the patient has a slight pre-diabetic condition. Doctor, will you confirm my findings?
No, thank you. I'm trying to cut down.
That's an order, Doctor.
I know my limit. No sugar.
No sugar taste, the doctor says. Just my little way of showing you that there's something far more important to the pathologist than taste. That is the power of observation. If you had been observing, Doctor, you would have seen that I put this finger in the urine, but I put this finger in my mouth. Lesson number one, Doctor.
Yes, but if you had tasted the specimen, Doctor, you would have noticed a dangerously high level of fractoids. This patient has pituitary glombosis.
Oh, well, let me see that. Tastes like plain old piss to me, Doctor. All right, with a slight metallic flavor indicating a high level of zinc. Doctor, here, you try.
Wait, just a minute. I didn't really taste the urine. I was just kidding.
You what?
I did the same thing he did. I switched fingers. I thought it was obvious.
Can I have a word with you, Doctor? Now,
listen here. You might have made a fool out of some of my colleagues, but you're going to have to get up early in the morning to put one over on Dr. Oliver Wendell Ludwig. Now, you look at this face. What do you see?
I see alcohol poisoning and trichosis in the tertiary stage.
Get out. Get out! Out!
I think
out,
we've been dismissed.
Out! Out! All of you! Out!
So it's a good time to revisit that. The cast is incredible. It's just very funny. I just think this kind of spoof is something I still have great affection for and that still has great appeal to me. And I guess I just never get tired of it. I feel like it maybe has some roots in older style comedy, Marx Brothers, what have you. And so there's some deeper appeal for me anyway. But I do like this movie and I do recommend it. And it's got a nice audio commentary from actor filmmaker Pat Healy and his film curator brother Jim Healy. And I love these guys' tracks. They did one for The Flamingo Kid and Taking a Pelham 123, and both are great, you know, well-informed and yet very personal tracks, you know, where they have their own asides that they add, as well as some researched business about actors and scripts and all that stuff. So these guys definitely know what they're doing, and they sort of enhance the disc with a good track. So kudos to Kino for using them. So that's Young Doctors in Love, Kino Lorber Studio Classics. Next up, we have Home for the Holidays from 1995.
I'm working, studying, struggling year after year. You know how I've been working, studying, struggling year after year.
No matter how hard life is.
You're fired, Claudia. I have to.
No matter how difficult things are.
Oh, Mom, and I'm going to have sex with Tim. We talked it out like adults because we're not jerks and we fully realize this is a major step. Safely. And not in the car. Happy Thanksgiving, Mom.
There's one place you can always go. That's worse.
Ah, smile.
Claudia Larson is going home for the holidays.
Henry!
I can see your roots, Claudia.
When you see your father's organ, he can't keep his hands off it.
Dear Lord, we realize just lately everything's been changing too damn fast. And all sorts of things are always the same, even things we hated, like shoveling the turkey and stuffing the snow.
This is ridiculous. Aunt Gladys waiting. We gotta go. Come on. Come on, I'm serious.
You have to soak this whole tablecloth in vinegar and lemon juice now, Mother, and right away.
I have to burn it in hell.
That's a sporty necklace. You make that yourself?
From Luke.
Paramount Pictures presents a film by Jodie Foster.
When you go home, do you look around and wonder, who are these people? Where did I even come from?
Here's to us.
That's my car, man. What are you doing?
What the? Americans.
Into the house. Everyone. Before we're in the evening news.
Let's go out and keep eating, okay? It'll be okay if we just stuff ourselves till we can't even think anymore.
Home for the holidays.
Mom, do you like spot rubbers to together?
And this one is maybe slightly out of place in this stack, only because it's a little bit more heartfelt than the others, but is still very funny in parts. It is directed by Jodie Foster, and it says, Claudia Larson is heading home for yet another chaotic and exasperating family Thanksgiving, but a new visitor offers some interesting possibilities. If they can duck the flying turkeys, this romance may just have a chance.
You know, remember I told you I had this, this fantasy about you? It's a simple thing. You want to hear about it yet?
No.
Well, aren't you even curious?
Nope.
Why not? I'm letting you climb inside my head. I mean, but you don't want to hear about this fat?
Oh. No, because, you know, you're weird.
Oh, I'm weird. I'm weird.
Oh, yeah.
No, the whole world is weird, and it is getting weirder every day.
So? You're nuts.
I'm nuts? I'm nuts. You know what happened in Sweden?
Nope.
You didn't hear about this?
No.
You didn't hear about this? Doctors cured a deaf man by yanking a 47-year-old bus ticket out of the guy's ear.
Yikes.
So don't tell me about cotton on my nose, thank you very much. And in the next 47 years, at the present rate of progress, these new doctors they got, they're going to tell you the day you're born, what kind of horrible disease you're going to die from.
We know it.
And, you know, plus, now, in California, they have these people that throw birds in your car while you are waiting at the stoplight.
No.
Yeah, so you better lighten up. Because that's the way it's going to be. Every year of our lives, no matter where the hell we are from now on, till we all just dry up or blow away or get hit by a bus.
Are you through?
No. Give me the goddamn time of day, will ya?
Masterfully directed by Academy Award winner Jodie Foster, Little Man Tate, Home for the Holidays boasts an all-star cast including Holly Hunter, Robert Downey Jr., Anne Bancroft, Charles Durning, Dylan McDermott, Steve Guttenberg, Claire Danes, and Geraldine Chaplin. And yeah, this is a holiday comedy. Holly Hunter plays an art restorer. She basically works for a museum. And she's fired in the opening scene, but then she has to go home and see her parents, played by Charles Durning and Anne Bancroft, for Thanksgiving, and there's a lot of drama there, but it's not what I would call the sort of typical family drama. I don't know, there's something, again, much more heartfelt about this, much more emotional and affectionate. It's got both that sort of angst and anger that you can feel with family members, with people you've been with your whole life and who've you've had, you know, complicated dealings with, and that you sort of are still learning to love despite all their foibles after so many years of being together, but they still feel like home. I don't know. It's a cliched thing for me to try and describe it this way, but it's a very good movie and one that I had avoided because I guess I thought it was just yet another kind of man ain't families crazy kind of wacky comedy. But like I said, there's a lot more under the surface. There's a lot more depth to it and a lot more emotional resonance and a great ending, which I think really helps it be a memorable movie. It also has a really great audio commentary from director Jodie Foster. Not surprisingly, she's incredibly well-spoken and intelligent and has a lot to say about the creative and artistic things behind the movie and what, you know, she was going for and, you know, how it was to work with these actors. I mean, it definitely is an actorly movie in a lot of ways in that the script has some scenes where actors are just allowed to pontificate a little bit, but in that sort of philosophical way. But it doesn't bother me in this movie. I feel like it's just really well done and well worth picking up. That's from Shout Factory Select, that Blu-ray. From heartfelt comedy to straight up goofy screwball, my next film is Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag from 1997.
Bring me their heads.
Okay.
This is Tommy Spinelli.
They have valuable family heirlooms in there.
These are valuable too.
Look, pal, this goes right on.
Wait, I think those are live human organs.
Trust me, pal. They don't feel it.
Now his luggage.
You didn't lose nothing, did you?
Is going on vacation.
What did you get in there? Looks like you packed for a month.
Where the hell are my heads?
Don't worry about it, all right? It'll happen before he starts thinking.
And he's going to need some help.
You got my heads and I want them back.
Or a lot of heads.
If you ain't there, your buddy's here in history. You got it?
Are gonna roll.
This university has hundreds of frozen heads. Heads are us.
Joe Pesci, David Spade.
Chopping off heads just takes it out of you, huh?
Eight heads in a duffel bag.
And this is from Twilight Time. And it says, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag is a dark comedy from writer-director Tom Schulman, Dead Poets Society, starring the singular Joe Pesci as a gangster hired to deliver a bag crammed with severed heads to a crime boss who wants proof of their former owners' demises. On a commercial flight, the head-stuffed bag gets switched with one belonging to a young man on his way to visit his girlfriend, Christy Swanson, and her parents, George Hamilton and Diane Cannon. Hijinks ensue. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, the main actor is Andy Comeau, who I don't know, and who's okay in this movie. But yeah, it's you know, he goes with his girlfriend on this retreat with her parents who don't really like him, and she's actually in a place where she's ready to break up with him, so that's already an awkward situation. And then he finds the heads in the duffel bag, and other people find the heads, and he keeps losing the heads, and yeah, much hijinks. And then Joe Pesci, who's kind of playing a dumber version of his character from Goodfellas, has to track down this guy, and he ends up going to his medical school college where he is studying, and he runs into his roommates, played by David Spade and Todd Luizzo from High Fidelity. And so those guys get involved, and then they're trying to find other heads to match the heads that are potentially lost. So anyway, goofy, pretty stupid, screwball, but enjoyable enough in a nostalgic 90s way that I was entertained in revisiting it. This one I think I had seen, but yeah, it had been a long time. It had been VHS, probably the 90s when I saw it. And lastly, real quickly, Leonard Part 6.
Episode 1 of the comic movie hit of the season. Bill Cosby is picked.
We need you, Leonard,
to save the world.
But I have nothing to wear.
Armed only with a combat pusher, under our missiles and a very fast ostrich, will he save the day? Find out for yourself. See the world's favorite funny man, Bill Cosby.
All right.
In Leonard Part 6, an adventure in comedy, rated PG. Leonard Part 6 starts Friday, December 18th at select theaters.
Which stars the not-so-great Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby is on a madcap mission to save his marriage, his daughter's reputation, and the world in this imaginative misadventure, Leonard Part 6. Leonard Parker, Cosby, a former secret agent turned bon vivant restaurateur, is enlisted to stop the evil Medusa Johnson from destroying the world with her vast army of killer frogs, lobsters, and horses. It's a tough assignment for the top-notch agent, but his troubles don't end there. Parker's trying to win back his ex-wife, who dumped him 7 years ago, and his daughter's about to marry a man who's old enough to be her grandfather. But have no fear, it's all in a day's work for Leonard in this wild and wacky comedy for Cosby fans of all ages. So yeah, Cosby movies. Incredibly complicated now. And this was never a good movie to begin with, but one that I saw when it came out, and I was really obsessed with Bill Cosby himself at the time, that we had taped it off HBO, and the Cosby Show was on, and so I was caught up in that Cosby affection of the moment, which is, you know, thankfully not present now. But yeah, this is just one of those movies that's a gigantic mess. It's like one of the most notorious bad movies of the late 80s. And when you see it, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But it is made on such a huge scale that you can't help but, on some level, see it as just this train wreck that you can't look away from. I mean, it's shot by Jan DeBont, for crying out loud. So, I mean, the movie looks really good, and it's, you know, just this ridiculous, outlandish spy comedy with an overweight Bill Cosby as the James Bond type dude, I guess. Definitely an interesting curio, maybe good for a hate watch at this point. I don't know. Anyway, that one is from Mill Creek Entertainment. No extras, but transfer looks pretty good. So that is it for my epic comedy stack. I do hope you have enjoyed this episode and maybe have taken some notes on some films you might want to pick up, because I think there's a lot of good stuff in this group to be enjoyed for comedy fans, which I am a big comedy person myself, especially these days. So please check out these discs: Warner Archive, Kino Lorber Studio Classics, Mill Creek, Twilight Time, all good labels, all worth your time and attention. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week. Bye-bye.